Chapter 63. Breakfast time, and with an unpurified body the Hindu must not eat. Then we struck into the hot plain, and found the roads crowded with pilgrims of both sexes, for one of the great religious fairs of India was being held, just beyond the fort, at the junction of the sacred rivers, the Ganges and the Jamuna. Three sacred rivers, I should have said, for there is a subterranean one. Nobody has seen it, but that doesn't signify. The fact that it is there is enough. These pilgrims had come from all over India. Some of them had been months on the way, plodding patiently along in the heat and dust, worn, poor, hungry, but supported and sustained by an unwavering faith and belief. They were supremely happy and content now. Their full and sufficient reward was at hand. They were going to be cleansed from every vestige of sin and corruption by these holy waters which make utterly pure whatsoever thing they touch, even the dead and rotten. It is wonderful, the power of a faith like that, that can make multitudes upon multitudes of the old and weak, and the young and frail enter without hesitation or complaint upon such incredible journeys and endure the resultant miseries without repining. It is done in love, or it is done in fear. I do not know which it is. No matter what the impulse is, the act born of it is beyond imagination marvelous to our kind of people, the cold whites. There are choice great natures among us that could exhibit the equivalent of this prodigious self-sacrifice, but the rest of us know that we should not be equal to anything approaching it. Still, we all talk self-sacrifice, and this makes me hope that we are large enough to honor it in the Hindu. 2 millions of natives arrive at this fair every year. How many start and die on the road, from age and fatigue and disease and scanty nourishment, and how many die on the return, from the same causes, no one knows, but the tale is great, one may say enormous. Every 12th year is held to be a year of peculiar grace. A greatly augmented volume of pilgrims results then. The 12th year has held this distinction since the remotest times, it is said. It is said also, that there is to be but one more 12th year for the Ganges. After that, that holiest of all sacred rivers, will cease to be holy, and will be abandoned by the pilgrim for many centuries. How many, the wise men have not stated. At the end of that interval it will become holy again. Meantime, the data will be arranged by those people who have charge of all such matters, the great chief Brahmins. It will be like shutting down a mint. At a first glance it looks most unbrahminically uncommercial, but I am not disturbed, being soothed and tranquilized by their reputation. Rur Foxy lay low, as Uncle Remus says, and at the judicious time he will spring something on the Indian public which will show that he was not financially asleep when he took the Ganges out of the market. Great numbers of the natives along the roads were bringing away holy water from the rivers. They would carry it far and wide in India and sell it. Tavernier, the French traveler, 17th century, notes that Ganges water is often given at weddings, each guest receiving a cup or two, according to the liberality of the host, sometimes 2,000 or 3,000 rupees worth of it is consumed at a wedding. The fort is a huge old structure, and has had a large experience in religions. In its great court stands a monolith which was placed there more than 2,000 years ago to preach Buddhism by its pious inscription. The fort was built 3 centuries ago by a Mohammedan emperor, a re-sanctification of the place in the interest of that religion. There is a Hindu temple too, with subterranean ramifications stocked with shrines and idols. And now the fort belongs to the English, it contains a Christian church, insured in all the companies. From the lofty ramparts one has a fine view of the sacred rivers. They join at that point the pale blue Jamuna, apparently clean and clear, and the muddy Ganges, dull yellow and not clean. On a long curved spit between the rivers, towns of tents were visible, with a multitude of fluttering pennons, and a mighty swarm of pilgrims. It was a troublesome place to get down to, and not a quiet place when you arrived, but it was interesting. There was a world of activity and turmoil and noise, partly religious, partly commercial, for the Mohammedans were there to curse and sell, and the Hindus to buy and pray. It is a fair as well as a religious festival. Crowds were bathing, praying, and drinking the purifying waters, and many sick pilgrims had come long journeys in palanquins to be healed of their maladies by a bath, or if that might not be, then to die on the blessed banks, and so make sure of heaven. There were fakirs in plenty, with their bodies dusted over with ashes, and their long hair caked together with cow dung. For the cow is holy, and so is the rest of it, so holy that the good Hindu peasant frescoes the walls of his hut with this refuse, and also constructs ornamental figures out of it for the gracing of his dirt floor. There were seated families, fearfully and wonderfully painted, who by attitude and grouping represented the families of certain great gods. There was a holy man who sat naked by the day, and by the week on a cluster of iron spikes, and did not seem to mind it, and another holy man, who stood all day holding his withered arms motionless aloft, and was said to have been doing it for years. All of these performers have a cloth on the ground beside them for the reception of contributions, and even the poorest of the people give a trifle and hope that the sacrifice will be blessed to him. At last came a procession of naked holy people marching by and chanting, and I wrenched myself away. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.